Going Linux, episode 177, listener feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom.
And I'm your chief executive minion, Bill.
Whether you are new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, listener feedback.
Today's episode of Going Linux is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with over 75,000 titles. If you are a regular listener, you already know that we have a special URL that lets you get a free audiobook from Audible when you sign up for a 14-day free trial. Whether you are a regular listener or a new listener, if you haven't signed up, the place to go to get your free audiobook and 14-day trial is www.audiblepodcast.com/goinglinux. There is currently no Audible player that runs natively in Linux, so before you sign up, please make sure that you can run the player under Wine or that you have a portable device like an Android or other smartphone that can run the Audible player. Again, that URL is www.audiblepodcast.com/goinglinux. So, Bill, you tried anything new lately?
Actually, no.
Okay. So what are you running then?
I'm running Ubuntu, and I'm running, actually, I can't tell because Tom would have a heart attack.
Okay. You're dual booting with something, right?
I'm dual booting with some. I'm testing something out for one of my people I work with, and I can't wait to finish my test so I can de-virus this laptop and make it whole again.
Okay, so we have an idea of what it is you're testing.
in all fairness, it's not bad, but I'm ready. I'm only doing this to help some people out, and believe me. This is a big favor that they'll never get again. Okay.
Fair enough.
And I'm trying Skype 4.0, and it looks nice, and it's slick, but it's glitchy, and I'm not happy with it. So I don't recommend it yet. You know how when you're chatting with somebody, and you just leave the chat open, and maybe after, 10 minutes or an hour, they type something.
Right.
It puts up a little asterisk or whatever on the icon down on the tray.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't do that. So you have to go and check every once in a while.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, I know.
Huh.
But I don't want to whine too much, so let's move on.
Okay.
Oh, Tom, Jono has a message for you. He wants to know, have you upgraded yet?
I'm upgrading one thing at a time. I just upgraded Skype. Tell Jono give me a break, huh?
Stop being so pushy.
Yeah. Get off my back.
Bill did ask him to ask That's you true. To upgrade, so he's just honoring his commitments. That's all. Again, good job on that, Bill. That was a great interview. Thanks.
Yeah, it really was.
All right, well, shall we get into our voicemail? Okay. Let's see here. So our first voicemail is from Ken, the small box admin, and he has some clarification on the difference between two photo and image applications.
Hi, Larry, Tom, and Bill. I'm a big fan of this show, and I have a few comments on Going Linux show number 172. While discussing applications, it seemed that Shotwell was the default image viewer on a lot of the newer distributions. However, Shotwell is really a photo manager, and the difference is that a photo manager is a way to import, organize, and edit your images, while an image viewer is really a quick way to view images that you have stored on your system. Now, different distributions come with different desktop environments, and different desktop environments come with different applications. For example, the GNOME desktop comes with the GNOME Image Viewer as its image viewer, and Shotwell as its photo manager, while the KDE desktop comes with GwenView as its image viewer and Digicam as its photo manager. So depending on your distribution and the desktop environment that it uses, it will come with different applications pre-bundled with it. Now, these photo managers have seemed to replace GIMP as a default installation. However, if you need the complexity of the GIMP, you can always install it as part of the distribution's repository, and it's normally a simple installation. One other thing that you didn't seem to mention was LibreOffice Draw, and it's a great tool that I use to create graphics for presentations and for inclusion into documentation. A lot of people may not be aware of it, but LibreOffice Draw is part of the LibreOffice suite of applications. Anyway, I always enjoy the show and always looking forward to the next one. Keep on doing the great work that you guys do.
Well, thanks for that update, Ken. We appreciate that we originally discussed on episode 172, if I remember correctly. So thanks for that.
Yep, that's right. Good job.
Yeah. And it was great. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
We love the audio feedback.
We do indeed. And I think we have another one, don't we, Tom?
Yes, we do. And this one is from Amy. Her comments are some things that we had questions about. And she runs both Ubuntu and Mint and uses one home partition.
Hi, Larry, Tom, and Bill. This is Amy Hereford, and I just updated to 12.04 Ubuntu, and so I thought I'd check in and let you know about a setup of mine that I think may be of interest, and since I originally heard of it, or at least got the idea for it, on Going Linux, I thought maybe you'd be interested in it. I have been listening to the podcast for years, always enjoy it, learn new things, try out new things. So what I do now is I run both Ubuntu and Mint, and I have the two distros in separate partitions, and then I have the home directory in a third partition, which is shared by the two distros. That allows me to have a solid production partition whenever I decide to update one of the versions, like going to 12.04. At this time, I know both Mint and Ubuntu are running well, so I can go ahead and update Ubuntu, try it out, and I know that once it goes live, it'll pull all the settings and everything from the home directory. But if anything goes wrong, I still have my Mint partition and everything's where I left it, so I can always know that I can keep on working in that partition if I need to. There are occasionally things to get used to, like some setting in the Ubuntu partition, in the Ubuntu distro, something in the home directory doesn't play well with Mint, and so every once in a while there'll be something I have to work on. But that's pretty rare. For the most part, everything works very, very well. That's the way I set up my desktop. I've been thinking about, for my laptop, doing a lightweight distro, thinking about Puppy or Lubuntu. Mainly on my laptop, I'm doing writing, and I do a lot of that. So all I would need is LibreOffice, Firefox, Dropbox to share the files with my desktop, and then Zotero. By the way, I just searched and found that you haven't talked about Zotero yet. So that is Zotero from Zotero.com, I think. .com or .org. Anyhow, it's a great footnoting program. It's free, easy to use tool. You can collect your citation, your bibliographic information from like Amazon. If I find a book I'm going to use, I just go to Amazon and load it. There's a button to click, and that loads it right into my library in Zotero. And that sits in the Firefox browser. So I can collect, organize, cite, share resources. It lives in the Firefox browser, and then there's an add-on for the for LibreOffice or OpenOffice, a plugin I think, to link it to the library that's sitting in Firefox. The project was funded by Mellon Foundation, Institute of Library Services, and Sloan Foundation. So it's got pretty good credentials. And it pulls the citation information, like I say, from Amazon. It can pull it from a lot of online library catalogs and then integrate with OpenOffice or LibreOffice and other word processing programs through those plugins. So that's been real helpful for me. And meanwhile, I have my Ubuntu and Mint partitions. I use Mint by preference, but I have a lot of friends who use Ubuntu by preference or only Ubuntu. So it's nice to be able to have it there so that if I need to go over and see what they're doing and give them some support, I can do that. So hopefully once I get the 12.04 of Ubuntu up and running, and I'll have that second partition kind of at production level, and I'll be able to work both partitions again until something else comes along. So anyhow, thanks again for the podcast. Always enjoy it. Always learn something. And hope this might be of some use to you all and the listeners as well. Thanks a lot.
Well, thanks for that review of Zotero, Amy. We appreciate that. Now that you've done it, we don't have to do it on the show. So thanks.
There you go. Excellent advice. Good to hear from you again.
Well, thanks, Amy.
Okay, I think Zotero is probably something that students would find very, very useful. Footnotes, citations, sure. Things like that. That would be great.
I wish I had that when I was in school.
Yeah, me too. Would have saved a lot of work.
Okay, guys, our last voicemail is from Bob. So let's give that a listen.
Hi, guys. My name's Bob, and I've been a listener since the very beginning. And I'd like to say thank you to all of you and for all your hard work and good information you bring to us, and whatever sacrifices you have to make in your personal lives to do that. I'd like to talk today about those of you who are not liking Unity, like I am. I don't like it at all, and but I do love Ubuntu. I've been using it for quite some time, and it's the only thing that really works with all my hardware without any difficulty, especially Bluetooth applications. I have a lot of problems with Fedora. Well, Fedora actually works on Bluetooth, but I have problems with that with other hardware. But, you know, I tried Debian and a lot of other distros. Even Linux Mint does not work with my Bluetooth. But anyway, I wanted to stay with Ubuntu, and I found a solution on the internet. It's called GNOME Session Fallback GNOME Tweak Tool, and you can load a classic GNOME desktop, which is close enough for me to allow me to stay with Ubuntu, and I can configure it, change the colors, whatnot. It's very good, and it's not. It actually uses less memory than Unity, and runs a lot smoother. Now I heard people talk about the 12.04, and I haven't tried it yet. I try to stay behind a version to avoid all the bugs, but. You know, I'd like to give it a try. The biggest problem I have with Unity is that you can't find what you're looking for. And I like to have a list, you know, because I can't memorize all the stuff I have on my computer. Nor do I want to. I just want a list to quite categorize it and scroll through. And, you know, I'm not big on searching with a search bar or just trying to, you know, go through mazes to try to find stuff. But I suppose if they added some extra menu system with the dash, you know, with the Unity system, I could probably use it. The only thing I find extremely annoying about Unity is that when you open up an application, it moves your menu bar to the main bar on the desktop. I don't know if 12.04 does that, but I know that 11.10 and 11.04 does, and I really, really can't stand that. I really do not like that at all. So if they ever wanted to prove Unity, for me, I would say getting rid of that would be a real plus in the positive direction there. And, you know, like I said, the menu system, it's okay, you know, but I still want to be able to find something quick through a menu system, and that's not the way to do it. I'm not really big on search bars. Like I said, I don't like just typing in something in the search bar. A lot of times you can't remember the name of an application you haven't used in a while. And you knew it's there and it functions for what you want, but you just can't remember the exact name of it or whatever. It's easier just to scroll through, categorized menus to find it, you know. So anyways, that's my thing there on Unity, and I hope this helps other people who are not liking Unity but would like to stick with Ubuntu, and really like GNOME 2 and are not liking the GNOME 3 shell. Anyways, please keep up the good work, and really appreciate all your efforts, and really love the info. This is Bob again, and I have to say 73 for the other fellow there. It must be a hand. Talk to you later. Bye.
So, Bill, he was talking about Unity and about the fact that you have to know what it is you're searching for to find it in the menus. Is that what you found as well when you were messing around with it and preparing for the interview with Jono?
Not really. I found that if you don't know what something is, if you type what you think it does,
so you can type things like text editor or word processor,
or internet, and it brings up everything with internet.
Okay, good. So maybe that would help Bob and how he's finding things. You don't have to know the name of the program; you just have to know what it is it does.
Yeah, and it's not 100% perfect, but it's pretty good. And it gets better all the time.
Well, hopefully we've been able to help Bob out and other people out when using Unity and Ubuntu.
And also remember, if you're using Unity, get the Unity tweak tool. It's awesome.
Yeah. And it sounds like that GNOME tweak is good as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, our first email is from Jared. He's got some advice for Tom.
Oh.
Yeah. Jared writes, "Hello, gentlemen." Hello, Jared.
Hello, Jared.
Hello.
"I believe that Tom has an MSI Wind, which I have too, version U120. I recently installed Mint 13 and had some suspend and resume issues. I've read that there is a similar issue with Ubuntu 11.04, but I can't say for sure. In any case, if he upgrades and his computer freezes shortly after resuming, he can find a likely solution at the following link," which of course we'll have in the show notes. "Not sure if that alone will fix it, as I also increased my swap space, which I understand can be a problem if it's too small. Hope this helps."
Well, thanks, Jared. Yeah, and I have found that Hibernate does not work on this thing. I'm running 10.04 Ubuntu, and if I hibernate it, it never comes back. So I'll take a look at that.
Yeah, I think if you really want to make sure you get hardware that suspend and hibernate works on, get a System 76 or a ZA Reserve or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, suspend and restore has always been kind of quirky on Linux anyway.
Yeah, but I've had it work on some machines, and
sure.
Yeah, I think it's hardware compatibility issues that are causing those problems more than anything else. But hey, that's the way it goes.
And next up, after a long absence, Tony wrote in. "Hi guys."
Hi Tony. Tony.
"The reason that I haven't spoken in a while was because my CPU that I had Linux Mint on went down. A friend of mine is trying to repair it, but he can't get past the normal boot up. He thinks that some files could have corrupted the system. I even went as far as taking it to a Linux users group, and they couldn't help. Tony." I have no idea, Tony.
Yeah, he's kind of thin on details here. And quite frankly, Tony did call into the Computer America show. And what we determined was we believe that he's got a bad power supply in his computer.
Yeah, it does sound like hardware.
Yeah. So hopefully, Tony, you can get that fixed. And a Linux users group, a Windows user group, or a Mac users group won't be able to help you too much with hardware. You got to get it fixed. So good luck, Tony.
And Bradley wrote regarding our feedback to Nightwise on our last listener feedback episode. And he writes, also, a few distros have already worked hard at getting Linux light, such as Lubuntu.net, which is very, very light and runs the best Linux distro out there. Of course, there's always Puppy Linux. I also agree with all you guys. Old sucks, go new, otherwise you won't have the current breed of software apps available. Again, old sucks and is obsolete.
Well, thanks, Brad.
Okay. Thanks, Brad.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, our next one is Bert, who commented on show 157, recording with Skype, the introduction. Good pick of topic in show 157. This kind of thing can certainly be useful, and I'm looking forward to the second part. I've not had such good luck with Audacity myself using Ubuntu 10.04, but I'm going to try an alternative repository and perhaps have a better experience with a newer version than that which is in the standard Ubuntu repos. Have you guys had better or worse luck with one Audacity version or another, or running a program on one distribution or release or another? Regards from Oaxaca. Oaxaca, Mexico. Oaxaca?
Oh.
I don't
know. Mexico.
Oaxaca, Mexico.
Okay.
Bert, I think the X is pronounced as an H. I'm sure somebody will correct us if it's wrong.
Yeah. I haven't had trouble with Audacity.
No, me neither. Not for a long time.
Not in a while.
Yeah.
I've never had any problems.
Yeah, it's one of those software programs that's been very rock solid on Linux for quite a long time now. So I don't know.
When Ubuntu first went to the Pulse sound system, I remember having trouble because there were three or four different places you had to go for menus for Pulse and Plug and whatever. So I had a little problem then, but not with Audacity itself.
I was also going to say that if he's looking for the latest and greatest Audacity, they have a website. So why don't he give that a look and see if that might give him the most current version?
You know, and I was really hoping he'd say hello to us.
Yeah, well, maybe the next person will.
I wanted to say, hey, Bert. Okay, and our next email is from Richard Rucroft of the Rusty Microphone Podcast, who noticed something about Google. He says, hi, guys.
Hi, Richard.
Hi, Richard.
Hi, Richard.
I just wanted to say one thing that's not Linux specific, but people may want to know about this anyway. My wife mentioned that when she did a Google search, it showed only Canadian-specific results. And so I did some other checks. I noticed a long time ago that Firefox would not allow me to connect to google.com, but always redirected me to google.ca. Since I live in Canada, the CA is for us. This is why I stopped using Firefox. I checked my Linux machine and it redirected me to google.ca. Not good. Then I discovered that even IE, yes, the W system, is redirecting me to google.ca, and I could not get to google.com under any circumstances. I like to search the worldwide Google, and I'm very frustrated when I can't get to where I want to go on the internet. Google has an answer for this. They say to type in google.com/ncr. That's November Charlie Romeo. And that will always take you to the main google.com site. And it works. So if you put your google.com/NCR, the NCR forces a connection to the main Google page. People who live in other countries, like Australia or England, might be experiencing the same thing. What about these search boxes in browsers? Where are they taking you? I've gotten into the habit of using Google's main page for my searches, but most people use the little search window in their browser. Am I the only one concerned about this? It seems governments want to force you to go only to certain places. This is like herding cattle. I guess if you live in the U.S., you're not concerned about this kind of thing. Thanks for a great podcast. Richard in Toronto.
Well, I'm not sure that it's governments controlling Google at this point.
I don't think so.
I think it's Google trying to improve the search results so that you get what's of interest to you. And, you know, I live in the United States and I'm concerned about this. What things am I getting filtered on that I'm not even aware of? Because I am going to the main Google site, or at least I think I am. I should try searching using /NCR on the end of my google.com.
And see if it does anything different.
Yeah, I don't know.
Actually, guys, it's much easier to just to look. If you look at the bottom of a Google search page, it gives you, lets you pick the other Google sites, or the regional Google sites for United Kingdom, for Saudi Arabia, for Canada. All you do is just click and it'll take you right there.
Well, that's fine if you're on the main Google page doing your search, but what if you're using the search box that's built into Firefox?
Oh.
You know? Or what happens on Chrome? What does it do? Because you use the main URL bar. I mean, where's that taking you?
You'd have to dig into the settings and type the Google-NCR. And so every time you use the search box or connected to Google with a Chrome or IE or Firefox, it takes you right to the main site.
Yeah. I'm sure Google's trying to be helpful.
Yeah. Okay, guys. We got a request from Don. He says, "Hi, Going Linux."
Hi, Don.
Hi, Don.
And hi, Don. "I am a person that uses Linux at least 5 hours a day. Of course, I've been distro hopping, good man, and I found a very interesting distro. It's called Sorcerer. Check it out and please put it in your Ogcast."
Okay, well, we will check that out. That's one for you, Bill.
Oh, goody. I got new discs. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, okay. So let me add it to the show notes here. Sorcerer. And we'll figure out what the URL is later. Add it to the show notes so everybody can go there and try it out. All right. Our next email is from Mark, who wrote, "Thanks for your hard work putting the pod-cast together." New way of spelling podcast.
Yeah.
"I am slowly making the transition from paned glass, and I have been messing around with different Linux distributions." I'm not sure what the reference to paned glass is. Paned.
What is that?
P-A-I-N-E-D. Paned glass.
It's the Windows arrow. They call it glass.
Arrow glass, paned glass. Yeah. Got it. Okay. And he's been messing around with Linux distributions. "I regularly hear on the show that you're trying different flavors, i.e. Ubuntu, Mint, Fedora, SUSE, etc. And was wondering how to uninstall your previous distro and install the next contender without compromising your home folder, i.e. any docs or media that you have. I am thinking from my very brief play with Linux that you have separate root and home directories, and that you effectively overwrite the files in root. This may be a huge oversimplification, but I would appreciate your answer as I am currently stuck on Kubuntu, which I like right now. I just want the knowledge to change without losing any data. I have a 100 megabit internet connection and spend an inordinate amount of time downloading distros which only get virtualized, then insert glaze reference here, and I badly want to take the plunge full time. Thanks." Well, as the resident distro hopper, Bill, can you provide Mark some insight here?
I can. When you, he's got Kubuntu, so basically, he's going to have to work a little harder when he installs his next distro. He's going to install the new system files, but he's going to tell the partition to not touch, not format his home folder. So what that does, everything in the home folder will not be touched, so when it boots up, your Firefox and your files will still be there. So that's how you get around having to reinstall everything again. But there is a few caveats that he needs to know about. Going from like Kubuntu to regular Ubuntu, they use different browsers and some different themes, so he might have some things look a little wonky. He can fix it by just changing the settings, so just be prepared that you might have some things that don't exactly work exactly right. But as a general rule, the easiest way is just to go ahead and back up what you want onto a thumb drive, you know, and just do a complete reinstall and then just put it back. But if you don't want to do that, when you're loading your system doc, your new system, just tell the partition manager not to format your home directory.
Okay.
And also, Amy kind of covered this in her voicemail.
She did.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. Okay.
Go listen to that again.
Yep.
And just to something else that might save him just a little bit of time. You don't have to format your swap. You can leave your swap alone too. So you can just leave their home and swap alone and just format that one partition. It speeds things up just a little bit, but just sure. A little benefit.
Okay, great. Thanks, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, next up, David writes to us. He says, "Hey, BLT."
Hey, David.
Hey, David.
And then in parentheses, he says, "Maybe it should be LTB, just to keep things in proper seniority order." Okay, I don't care.
I don't have seniority, so it doesn't matter. Minions don't get seniority. I'm actually no. In the broom closet right now.
Yeah. Well, the chief executive minion gets a little bit of seniority right. Amongst the billions, as Nightwise says, billions and billions of minions that we have.
But I still can't get them to bring me a cup of coffee.
I think we've got about enough minions now. We could use some henchmen.
Okay.
I'm going to nominate Steve McLaughlin for that. He'd probably make a good henchman.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. Continuing, I actually haven't written you guys in a while because the last couple times I emailed, I didn't get replies, leading me to believe that my emails aren't getting received or worse. Gasp. You don't like me. frowny face. I'm not sure which one to believe yet. But anyways, I love this show, so I can't stay upset about that little detail for too long. You guys were talking a bit about media players for Android that you use, and this reminds me that I have a software pick to write about. It's called FDroid, and its address is f-droid.org. Allow your Android phone to have a place to go that only offers FOSS software and is, of course, trustable. I love this app because it's basically a FOSS, that is, free and open source software repository for your Android phone, and it does just what you would expect it to do. Allow your Android phone to have a place to go that offers FOSS software that is, of course, trustable, preferable, and in most situations a lot smaller in file size. I assume because of lack of bloat. I originally started using FDroid because the phone that I had at the time had a pitifully small amount of app storage space, and this was a simple way to find apps that didn't fill that space too quickly. But even now, after I've had a much nicer phone with much more storage space, I still prefer it because I consider myself to be an open source vegan, or someone who possesses a high preference for using open source only, as much as I can. Hope this email makes it through. Talk to you later. David, a.k.a. Pyro Chameleon. Well, thanks, David.
Yeah, thanks, David, and we apologize for not getting the email out. Maybe you sent up during the time that I was on vacation. I don't know. But hopefully, this inclusion of your email in our show will, you know, make up for it, or repair any damage we've made to your sensitive nature. Yeah.
And don't worry, David. The only person they really hate is me, and they let me play. So, okay. So we like you. Okay. Minions are made to be hated. Just remember that. Okay, guys. It's Brandon writes. Hi, guys.
Hi, Brandon.
Hi, Brandon.
Hi, Brandon.
I am not new to Linux, but I am a new listener to your show, and just thought I'd write to say I like it, and I think that you're doing a great job. Especially the minion. No, that was just added. I just listened to about 5 or 6 of your shows so far, and I plan on going through the whole catalog and seeing what other topics you cover. I dual boot Windows XP and Ubuntu on my desktop, and I also have a CR48. That's the that little Google Chromebook.
Yeah.
That I have Zubuntu running on. I really only use Windows to play games. If there was better support for games and Linux, I would drop Windows entirely. Brandon.
Well, look at that humble indie bundle. I think you'll find some nice native Linux games in there, as well as some that will run in Wine. So maybe you can make that conversion over to Linux after all.
Sure. And speaking of running on Wine, you can get the application called Play on Linux. It's probably in your repository. And that'll play a lot of games. It's scripts that use Wine to load your games.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wine is awesome, and it's getting better and better all the time.
It is.
You bet. Well, our Gone Linux story is from Bert, who wrote a very, very, very long email. So we'll tag team this one in multiple sections.
Okay.
All right. Get your padding on your chairs, guys. Let's go. Hi, LT and B. Hi, Bert.
Hey, Bert.
There you go.
Hey, Bert.
First, my story in a line or two. And I read part of Bert's email on the Computer America show, but for those of you who don't listen to those episodes, I'm going to read his first part again. First, my story in a line or two. I went from interested in Linux from a distance, i.e. reading a few reviews for new releases of the major distros and other pop tech articles, to Gone Linux in less than 2 weeks back in midsummer of 2010. I would have tried GNU Linux and most likely made the switch a long time before that, but I'm blind and need something that had accessibility software working out of the box, as Linux users are few and far between where I live. As soon as I heard that Vinix, Linux for the VI, visually impaired, had released a version based on Ubuntu 10.04 Lucid Linux, I downloaded the ISO image and burned my first live CD. In short, it booted, came up talking on my old Dell laptop, and to my delight, in spite of some accessibility issues, I quickly discovered that Linux was for me. Perhaps sometime I could give a short explanation of the accessibility options that exist for Linux these days. Sadly, there is little publicity regarding Linux for the blind, low vision, and other disabled people, but that's not why I wrote today.
And Bert continues, I heard a recent Computer America podcast where you suggested that forums, and then in parentheses he says, I like fora, but no one uses it these days, it seems. Oh, okay. As a plural to forums. All right. Forums were a good place to start when one has a Linux problem. The forums are indeed great sources of knowledge, but let's put things in perspective, please. One thing is, before asking a question, one should search for existing posts on the topic in question. Although many groups are more than friendly and helpful, no one likes to have to repeat themselves constantly. And all those old posts are up there for a reason. Also, and more important, although you are not going to see so many RTFM replies in the Ubuntu forum, for example, reading the fine manual is the place to start for most Linux questions. A newbie, and sometimes even a geek, is of course going to be intimidated, confused by man pages, but others are quite well written and give clear examples that can be understood by folks with little computer experience.
Info pages exist for some software GNU Linux components as well, and tend to go into more detail and often are written better than the man pages are. Besides, typing man program name or man command and viewing these pages in a viewer in a terminal or console, there are other solutions to make accessing and using this information easier. There is a very nice program called DWWW, which lets you see pretty much all the documentation on your Linux box in a web browser of your choice. At least for Ubuntu and Debian, it's as easy as sudo apt-get install DWWW.
It does require an HTTP server to run, but apt-get or aptitude should just pull in Apache 2 by default, and it is automatically configured. Then you can just type DWWW from the command line and search for your documentation for any mention of whatever it is that's interesting you. I'll also attach manshow.sh, a short script that works for Debian-based distros that use the GNOME desktop and even CLI-only installations that open the man page in either Nano if opened in a console or gedit if opened from a GNOME terminal. We'll include that script in the show notes in case somebody wants to go to all this effort to display a man page. This lets you save a copy and add notes, cut out any geekies that annoys you, and so forth, without affecting the original image itself. The other place to look for help before or at the same time as the forum is on the official site for the distro or release. Why do this when often the forum will answer your question in plainer language than a man page? Because depending on what you are talking about, you may be able to do as much harm as good to your computer by trying to apply a given solution. And as often as not, you can find completely conflicting information in forum posts. Sometimes these are honest little mistakes and typos, and other times something may have worked in a very special set of circumstances, but is not generally recommendable. Usually, serious errors are caught in the good forums, but not always, and not always right away. Having the official documentation to compare with whatever answers you may receive or find in an archive may be the difference between picking up a good solution and breaking your system beyond your abilities to fix it. Also, many who respond to forum questions will expect you to have looked at the documentation and won't explain everything in great detail. And believe it or not, in time, you will most likely start understanding more and more man pages.
And Bert continues, also, it's a good idea to copy suggested code in a text file so that you can double check and or edit it before pasting it into the command line. How often does one little typo or a line break make things not work and lead to yet more confusion? If it's really simple, at least check things before hitting enter to run a posted command. Then again, other posts are nothing than bits of man page pasted into the reply form. Come to think of it, LOL. I don't mean to be a fuddy-duddy. Can one still be one of those, or are they extinct? But besides gaining respect as one who values the time of others and doesn't ask frivolous questions, one can save hours of one's own time by following the strategy I suggest. One example, recently I wanted to install Dropbox on a Debian machine that does not have a GUI. I knew this was possible, but I didn't know how to set this up, nor how to interface with Dropbox from the command line. I did a couple of Googles and went to the results from Debian and Ubuntu forums. I was about to embark on a process of installing the entire Nautilus Dropbox package and then removing the graphical interface bits and doing some reconfiguring that I didn't really understand, but fortunately forum posts were slightly conflicting, so I waited and searched some more. Guess what?
What? What?
On the Dropbox website, there's now an installation page with a few lines that explain exactly what to download and how to make it work. There's no need for any of the workarounds that I was reading about in forum posts. Those were old, complicated solutions and may not have even worked now anyway.
Of course, not all the problems and their potential fixes involve doing dangerous things that could leave you with a badly broken system. And the more you know, the more common sense can help you sort through this BS. I enjoy the show and wish I had been listening when I first started using Linux. I've meant to drop you an email before more than once to comment on or correct something said on the show. But time passed and someone else wrote in, or it's too old for messing with now. Keep up the good work. I'll write you again one of these days. Regards, BH. Thanks, BH.
Okay, thanks, Bert. And to wrap up our email that we had left over from the Computer America show, this is the balance of Brian in New Zealand's email. Brian wrote, "Greetings from a listener in New Zealand. I discovered your co-hosted podcast on Computer America in the middle of last year, and as a longtime Linux user, I have been downloading them since to listen to. I would like to reiterate a statement made by the host recently that many home and business users are unknowingly already relying on Linux. Notably, it runs their modems with its built-in firewall. I would also venture that most pages they will view and most data files they will download would be served by Linux-based computers. Mega upload, oops, how did that get in there? Amazon, Google, Twitter, Facebook, PayPal, etc., etc., etc. All rely on Linux. And when your company must be capable of serving millions of pages per hour reliably and consistently, hour after hour, day after day, you learn not to entrust the task lightly. Rather than get into a debate over how or why so many hundreds of millions of computer users have neither heard of Linux nor think that they use it, let's just imagine the impact if it suddenly and magically disappeared for a day. I'm absolutely certain they'd be stunned by the repercussions. Over a decade ago, when I was beginning to use Red Hat Linux on a PC, an Apple salesman who demonstrated a Mac Pro at a show told me that PCs weren't high-end, and to do high-end work, I'd have to buy a Mac. I looked him in the eye and replied, "Have you heard of Weta Digital?" Well, he had apparently, because he was a Kiwi, after all. So I also asked him if he'd heard about Linux, Red Hat, or SGI. Those he hadn't. So again, looking him straight in the eye, I said, "Well, the SGI Workstation Pro is a PC. It runs Red Hat Linux, and Weta have hundreds of them for making Lord of the Rings. Are you telling me cinematography is not high-end?" There wasn't a peep out of him in response. I will remember his look till the day I die. People like Weta, Boss, Peter Jackson, who rely on Linux, don't afterwards have a reason to question their choice or why they made it. Basically, we could not have achieved what we have without it. I read last year about the headmaster of a new, now two-year-old boys' high school here in New Zealand, who'd opted for Linux for the school's computers, one of the few schools in New Zealand that uses Linux, and about how he was asked as to whether he had regretted the move to Linux, even though it was not what most schools here used. "Ask the boys," was his response. The boys were busy talking at an international Linux conference about how they were doing things that boys their age didn't typically do at school, program and dabble in software engineering. They were also over the moon. Well, thanks, Brian, and we'll include a link in the show notes to the Weta Digital website, just for those listeners who are interested in finding out a little bit more about Weta and the various things that they have done, the various movies that they have contributed to. A lot of good information in there for sure.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. I think that wraps it up for this episode. And Guys, our next episode will be the long-awaited Linux Applications Advanced episode. Until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information, detailed instructions, screencasts, and illustrations.
And remember, if you have a topic you want us to cover on the show, use the forums to leave your topic suggestion in the thread labeled Topic Suggestions. And the forums are at forum.goinglinux.com.
If you want to support our efforts, click the donate button while you are there.
You can also send us an audio comment by email. We'll play it on the show. Our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com, and our voicemail is 1-904-468-7889.
Follow our show updates on Twitter and Identica. We are Going Linux, all one word.
You can download the episodes from the website, or you can use the HTML5 or the Flash Player to play them right on the show notes page.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
Talk to you later.
73.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.